And he drives one down the right field line. That's a base hit going to the wall. Soto is in. Alonso digging for third. He's going to be waved around. The relay throw to the plate by Estrada. He slides and he's safe.
Oh, wow.
Lindor drives in a pair with a pinch hit double, and the Mets go up 4-2 in the ninth. Broken toe and all.
And he gets one in the air to deep right field. Back goes Freeman, back to the wall. It's out of here. Ronnie Mauricio goes deep. Ronnie Mauricio's first home run of the season gives the Mets a 1-0 lead. He has got such awesome bat speed, and he hit that ball a ton.
And Alonso drives one to deep left field, back toward the corner. It is out of here. Pete Alonso strikes again, his second home run of the day, his 17th home run of the year.
Wow.
He goes past David Wright into second place all by himself on the Mets' all-time home run list. A two-run shot for Alonso to make it 12-3 New York.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, June the 9th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and would love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy Monday, everybody. Another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Hope you enjoyed a recap of the weekend, some key highlights from the Mets. Three-game sweep of the Colorado Rockies. A well-earned day off today, before a short homestand and then some divisional play against the Phillies and the Braves. Mets with their most successful road trip of the season as they went 5-2, and they easily could have ran the table with a couple of tough losses against the Dodgers. Self-inflicted wounds there. And joining me in just a little bit, haven't had a chance to talk to him in quite some time, but you guys know him from Sports Illustrated. The great Pat Ragazzo will be joining me, and we'll go through everything Mets here. And it was just a couple of days ago that I had come to you, really took the Dodgers series separately. And even though this was a taking care of business series, and ultimately, and wrote about it a little bit over at Beyond the Mic on Saturday's premium piece, could have been a lot different. Could have been an ultimate stub your toe loss on Friday with the runners left on base and nearly blowing the game after they took the lead. If not for Francisco Lindor and for his heroics and coming off the bench, broken pinky toe and all. And I mean, what more? And I think I'll start there. What more can you ask of Lindor? And as we get deeper and deeper into this Mets contract, and I talked about this, the leadership components of Lindor, the fact that he plays every day, holds himself accountable, plays at a high level. Need him to get a big hit. We saw that during the postseason. Saw that all the way back throughout the season. Maybe one of the biggest hits of all was his home run in Atlanta. That may not only have broken the Mets' yoke and helped send them to the postseason, but may have broken the Braves as we know it, seeing how they're playing. And, you know, time and time and time again, you see him come up big, you know, whether it be a leadoff home run as an energizer bunny or the RBI guy in the middle of everything like he did against the Phillies in the NLDS. And now it's starting to get serious. We're not only the conversation about Lindor being officially named Mets captain and doing everything you would ask of that role. I mean, it's interesting that later this summer, David Wright is going to have his number retired, the last Mets captain. And, you know, there have been others in Mets history, Johnny Franco and Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter, and it would be great to see Lindor be named the fifth captain. And maybe we'll ask Pat if he agrees with that. But as you look at his numbers, and you see him move up the all-time shortstop list here with, you know, just using wins above replacement. Within 2 to 3 years, if he continues to play at this very, very high level, I mean, he's going to be in the pantheon of Hall of Famers like Alan Trammell and Derek Jeter and Ozzie Smith and Pee Wee Reese and Barry Larkin. And you know, I don't see why, and maybe that is a push, the best statistical shortstop of all time. I know that can be debated. I know Yankees fans are going to say Jeter, but Cal Ripken Jr. And right now, when you look at comparison statistically and look at who he is, I mean, he's every bit the shortstop that Cal Ripken Jr. was. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Ripken for the Iron Man streak playing a premium position, but offensively, defensively, see, you know, it takes a lot. I mean, this is not the first time he's had a foot injury. He had one a few years back when he, what did he, you know, hurt his toe or something in a closet door in a hotel room. So he's got to start putting some protection there on those toes, Lindor. But I think it's fair to say that you're witnessing the greatest shortstop of all time in Mets history. And when it's all said and done, one of the best shortstops in the history of the game. And I don't know if we really understood that. I know I didn't when he signed here in 2021. I know I question the contract with the way that the escalating salaries are going. And you go to FanGraphs, his performance over the last couple of years has been worth $50 to $60 million. He's getting paid two-thirds of that. And the leadership part is something that I don't know if we all really knew was in him. Obviously, it's been talked about since day one. He was a great communicator. He was an energizer. And the fact that he's morphed into this leader. And he's not, you know, the intense leader that Keith Hernandez was, or Pete Rose, or the dour, Derek Jeter. But he's got that right balance of leadership, accountability, performance, and sunshine. And I wrote about this over at Beyond the Mic. I mean, how many players in the history of this game, for the Mets at least, let's just say the Mets, I can't speak for the other 29 teams. I mean, the fans are singing his walk-up song. I mean, there's a certain amount of sunshine and love from the fan base. And this fan base is fickle. This fan base is tough. They're tough on their players. They're tough on their superstars more than anything. I mean, they'll love the Joe McEwings of the world, and they'll forgive mistakes from the Joe McEwings of the world. But Francisco Lindor or Juan Soto or Carlos Beltran, I don't know about that. So it really was symbolic on Friday. Lindor comes off the bench. He saves the Mets in what would have been a very frustrating loss and set the tone for the weekend. And it was funny, up to that point and even a little bit into Saturday night's game, I mean, what happened to Colorado? Here was a place that was the ultimate arena baseball ballpark. No lead was safe. I remember a game in the 90s. I think the Mets scored 7 runs in the first inning. You think 7-0. No lead is, you know, if, even in Colorado, lead is safe. Nope. Mets had to come back and squeeze one out. And it was like a basketball game there. Oh, you got a 10-point lead? Well, no, that's 3 3-pointers. That could be a tie game before you know it in 90 seconds. Now, there's no Larry Walker or Vinny Castillo or Dante Bichette or Todd Helton across the way. So this is one of the worst teams in the history of the game. And they may go down, and they may, for the second year in a row, beat the White Sox record. But I saw fly balls from Nimmo, especially the left field. And it was a little bit different here on a day game. And I know they use the humidor. But I was like, what's going on? The ball's not carrying in Colorado? Are we that at that point in this sport? The ball's not carrying in Colorado? But everything normalized. Mauricio hit a bomb into the upper deck. Pete with a couple of home runs. And McNeil with a couple of home runs. And everything turned out as it should when you're playing, if you're a team like the Mets and you're playing a team like the Rockies in Colorado. So, you know, you have that, Pete Alonso continuing, and I think it's fair to say that he could be in the conversation for the MVP. Great piece in The Athletic this morning, Will Salmon talking about Pete's preparation and how he's taken his own prep to the game to a new level. I guess it'll maybe spur some conversations about Pete going outside of the coaching staff and the hitting coaches and the prep that goes on with them, but I think it's an interesting piece how Pete is now, really from a seriousness standpoint, realized that he's got to take his game to the next level if he's going to get the money that he wants, if he's going to etch himself into the history of the Mets like he is now, passing David Wright. It's very conceivable with the way he's locked in right now, and I think from a standpoint of being locked in. I haven't seen this kind of locked in from a power standpoint since his rookie year. But overall, he's a way better hitter than he was his rookie year. I mean, this is probably the most complete stretch. 300 batting average, is that sustainable? I don't know. Yes, the strikeouts have kind of come back down to earth a little bit. You know, Pete is a guy that's going to strike out. But you look at him, he's walked 33 times, he struck out 62. You know, that's normal for Pete, but the on-base percentage almost, you know, shade under 400, that's a little different. He's hitting the ball in the gap for doubles. In the past, sometimes been home run or a single and nothing else. And Pete is far more of a complete hitter. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't, you know, it's not going to be easy. We're about a month away from the All-Star game, but that he breaks the team home run record by Strawberry by the All-Star break. And I wasn't so sure, even coming into this year, that Pete was going to be able to hit that. I mean, yeah, he's going to hit 30 home runs and stuff like that, but there was times where you had to wonder, you know, is Pete at a point in his career where they know how to pitch to him? Yeah, he'll hit home runs, but they won't be in the 45-50 range. You know, maybe he'll be in the 25-30 range. And, you know, he has dispelled all of that. So seeing Pete pass David Wright, seeing him now focus in on Strawberry, hopefully he stays healthy. And there'll be a lot of things to celebrate as you come mid-season. The right number retirement, Pete passing Strawberry. Maybe the Mets will recognize Lindor as captain. And as I'm going, you know, these are coming to my mind as I'm watching the ball games this weekend and certainly enjoying the Mets open up a cushion against the National League East and really put themselves at the top of the league here, the National League. And all this does is earn you a trip to the tournament, but now you could really start to think about maybe getting a bye and setting yourself up for the best pathway possible in the what is really a roll the dice October tournament that the baseball season has become, the baseball postseason has become. But what I thought a little bit about also was a Mets team of the past. And with all the talk this year with Soto, who, by the way, has quietly settled into being Juan Soto amidst all this Lindor talk, all this Pete talk, and all the winning. But, you know, looking at how Soto has had a rough start, similar to Beltran, how David Wright is getting honored this year in the talk with Wright because of Alonso's home run record. And then, you know, quite simply, if you're watching Lindor at short, you can't help but think about Jose Reyes. And I know Reyes, because of off-the-field issues, has seen his star dampen since he left here. He was by far, during the Omar Minaya Mets, maybe the most popular Met because of his speed and his smile. I mean, a lot of the things that we talk about with Lindor in terms of his energy, Reyes was that original Energizer Bunny. I mean, he would get on base, he'd single, steal second, and then even be driven in with a hit or moved over and get in with a sacrifice fly, almost like a kickoff return. That was like the baseball version of a kickoff return. And you think about those three guys, and you see Lindor, and you see Alonso, and you see Soto, and you look at the supporting cast, how the Mets have built up smartly their pitching staff with some very good arms that they're going to maximize with data and information, with how they're able to invest in the surrounding core players around their stars. I know that there's a lot of work to be done with these young players. I know Mauricio and Alvarez and Beatty and Acuna, they're going to drive me nuts. That's what's going to happen. But when they play well, the Mets tend to do really well. And then, of course, how this front office is always looking for value out of the bullpen. And really the antithesis of what Wright and Reyes and Delgado and Beltran were surrounded with during their tenure, where the rosters were pretty top-heavy. You'd be able to invest in the 8 to 10 top players, then the other 15 to 20. It was a bit of a crapshoot at times, and sometimes they were left a little bit short. Then forget about a farm system. That was one of the downfalls of the Omar Minaya regime, not developing much talent when he was there. I mean, some of that talent, it was later on, it was procured after he left, that Sandy Alderson benefited from. But thinking about those players, thinking about how their tenures were marred with more what off-the-field controversy after 06, one of the more fun seasons that I've experienced in Mets history, and how they never really were able just to play baseball, and we weren't really always able to appreciate who they were as players and the greatness of each one of them as a player. That this group now, hopefully, is able to do that. Because even when there's a fake manufactured controversy like the Soto one, These guys just continue to go on. I mean, it's really between Cohen and Stearns and the character and the type of personalities they have in that clubhouse. It's far different than it's ever been in Mets history. Part of that is probably them breaking through last year and shedding their skin of a lot of bad history with, like I said, with that Lindor home run. But some of that has to do, and a lot of that, you know, the credit has to do with the players themselves and the personalities. And I think Lindor has a lot to do with that. I think Lindor and how he goes about his business. And he's just got, like I said, I can't say enough. And this is coming from somebody who was not necessarily a fan of the trade. I was okay with the trade, but I wasn't about giving him a long-term contract extension. And I wondered, did you need to give him a decade's worth of commitment, you know, especially after the season he had in 2021? And is this the guy you want to build around? And in a lot of ways, I fell for the same thing is when you get a contract like that, you're expecting A-Rod. You're expecting A-Rod offensively. You're expecting all that A-Rod brought as an offensive package. And you got to forget about that. You know, Soto's more in the A-Rod world offensively than Lindor. Lindor brings you a lot of good stuff around the five tools of the game, and he's much better than I could have thought. And, you know, I think that you have to give him a lot of credit for where this team is at, how this team handles itself and conducts its business. And who knows? Let's see if, you know, I know the captaincy is just an official term. But he's truly the Jalen Brunson of the Mets, and it would be nice, and I think the fans would really like it, and would put like a good baseball story in the middle of the summer if you could do something along the lines of name him captain as you get deeper into this thing. Because I think, and this is unfortunate, one of the problems in this town, especially in this modern social media era, is that there's a feeling that you can only generate clicks or content with negative or with worry. Or with drama and anxiety. And look, they do that in the real world. Why wouldn't they do that with sports, right? And that's part of the whole thing. Like, there's always going to be things to be concerned about and talk about. And sometimes those things are always going to generate more engagement with an audience than just platitudes. But what a great baseball story would be between retiring Wright's number, the Mets in the midst of a 100-win pace right now, let's see if they keep it up, and Lindor having the cherry on top, being named captain, and being rewarded for the work that he's done and for where he's brought this team and this organization through right now. So Mets head home. I think the other takeaways from the trip is that the pitching is sustainable. They pitched well against the Dodgers in a very short span of time, home and home there. They've shut down the Cubs. They went into Colorado. I know the Rockies are bad, but that environment and the pitching was pretty good. The only one who really struggled was Blackburn. And, you know, look, he came in out of the bullpen, and it looked like he was struggling getting some of his breaking stuff over. That could be part of that could be the environment. Part of that could be just adjusting to the role, coming back from an injury. You know, you heard what I had to say about Lindor and Alonso. Jeff McNeil joining the party. This version of McNeil that since the All-Star break of last year is on pace to hit about 270 with about 25 home runs and about 75 RBIs, almost like a Daniel Murphy light. The version of McNeil that we saw in the second half of 2019 that had more power and a lower batting average seems to be the version that he feels. And look, I have no problem with it. Would I love for him to hit 320, 325? Sure. It looks like he's that version of McNeil was becoming harder to come by in a world without a shift. Maybe that was part of it. Or maybe the way they figured him out. But this version that's, you know, middle to bottom of the order, has power, can play around the field, plays some pretty good defense. The versatility is huge. That's why when everybody was ready to just dismiss him and throw him away, as much as I love Acuna's glove, you know, this McNeil is such a valuable player. And I think, and we'll see, especially now that Nimmo's at the top of the lineup, he provides some protection. Because Pete Alonso has had this MVP type season without much protection. If anything, he's benefited from Soto getting on base even when he's not hitting with the amount of walks that Soto gets. So, you know, McNeil may be able to provide some of that and could benefit if they start. And you got to think that they'll start to pitch around Pete a little bit in big spots. It may come down to McNeil being that important. And then later on, you know, is Mauricio or Vientos. And the Mets with these kids are going to have a really tough decision when Vientos and Winker come back. Because the more I see Marte starting to hit, he seems to be somewhat of a Soto whisperer. I don't think he's going anywhere. You only have so much space on the roster. Mauricio this weekend showed you what could be. He might be out of all of them, and I'll include Vientos in that because of his bat speed and his prolific power and how hard he hits the ball. He might be the most exciting of them all. I mean, another power bat in the middle of that lineup. You know, you have Beatty, you have Mauricio, you have Alvarez, you have Acuna. Somebody's going to have to go down. I wouldn't be surprised because Acuna and Beatty have the options that even if Beatty, who has struggled offensively, and I know he made the big error on the road trip, but continues to do really nice things defensively, will be sent down just because they have options. I think it could be very possible that that's going to happen. And, you know, just like, you know, with Montas and Manaea coming back, you don't want to mess up that rotation, but they're going to have to come back. What are you going to do with them? Is it possible that a starter will be brought into the bullpen to become that bridge? We've talked about the bridge. We've talked about the struggles of, and really if the only negative right now you could point out, particularly from this road trip, was that the bridge to Diaz struggled a little bit in a big spot. Brazenban as a backup closer. Reed Garrett as a bridge on Thursday afternoon. Again, Brazenban on Saturday gave up the lead, struggles a little bit against left-handed batters. That is a bit of a theme with Stanek and with Garrett and even with Brazenban for different reasons. So there is some, if you want to say, small clouds, but right now you got to feel pretty good. And you get a well-deserved day off. The Mets get a well-deserved day off. And they're back at it against the Nats, who are struggling offensively but have good pitching and are one of those teams in the NL East that may only be 500 or 75 to 77 win team, but they're plucky. They're pesky. You saw that in DC when they played them. And then you have the Rays, and you always know the Rays and the Mets owe them a little bit from last year when they just, you know, totally took them to the woodshed when they went to Tampa when the really rough month of May started. And then it's, you know, put the hammer down and maybe put some distance between themselves and the Phillies. And I know the Braves are double digits back, and they're always going to be the boogeyman because Mets fans know from their renaissance midseason last year that anything could happen. But what Mets did is very rare. And right now, you know, the Braves seem to be a bit of a dead team, but everybody still seems to remember them from, you know, their run in 2022 and who they've been pretty much under Brian Snitker since they made their turnaround after the rebuild in, 2017. So, a lot to feel good about. Lindor and Alonso are kind of the highlights here. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, Pat Ragazzo of SI, let's get his thoughts on all this. We'll talk a little bit about Lindor and Alonso and the pitching and what he thinks about what he sees with this 2025 Mets club. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.
What's it like to see Pete accomplish what he's doing at the plate right now?
Yeah, it's fantastic. He's playing great baseball right now, and he's just continually hitting. It's very good to see, and as a pitcher, I mean, you love to have runs on the board when you're playing, when you're out there, and he's helping this team out tremendously.
We're back, and joining me, friend of the show, it's been a while since we've had him on, Pat Ragazzo at Ragazzo Report here on X, SI.com, MLB Mets. And Pat, what a perfect time to have you on. There's not many times that you and I could have a conversation, and there's very little to complain about in Mets land these days, coming off a sweep of the Rockies. Could have been a perfect road trip. Four games up in the loss column, 4.5 games up on the Phillies. The Braves are in total disarray. And, you know, the Mets are holding their own against the Dodgers. So you got to feel pretty good right now if you're in Mets land and if you're following this team.
Yeah, you do have to feel pretty good, Mike. The Mets were very, very close to taking 3 of 4 in L.A. Just there's a couple things that need to be cleaned up. And, of course, that's hitting with runners in scoring position, except they did not have trouble scoring runs, to say the least, in the series with Colorado at Coors Field this past weekend. They were scoring runs in droves. So, yeah, I mean, a very good 5-2 road trip, and could have been 6-1.
I see a lot of fans particularly complain about the runners in scoring position situation, calling for Chavez's head, the hitting coach. Yep. It's tough because if the Mets went in 400 runners in scoring position, everybody would say they're going to come down to earth, that it's variable. There is an approach component. I know Mendoza's talked about it. Do you have any insight to it? Because it is annoying, and I think it's getting better. Obviously, when you hit the ball out of the yard, it doesn't matter where you are, you're going to score.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that I think is hanging over the team and hanging over their record. Anything to it in your opinion, or what you've seen being around the team, covering the team?
Well, yeah, I think it's just one of those unlucky things, and approach does have to do a little bit with it. I mean, we've seen some of the younger guys kind of abandon their approach, especially with runners in scoring position. When you look at Francisco Alvarez, who had a pretty good day today and homered to
Right.
dead center. You know, the Beatties, the Alvarezes, you know, Vientos before he got hurt. Like there's been some truth to that their approach is kind of they've strayed away from it and maybe are pressing a little too hard with runners in scoring position. But you know, it should be something that should improve as the season goes along. But it has been a major issue so far throughout the year. And despite that, they still have 41 wins.
Only could imagine what it could be. You brought up the kids. It's funny, as we head to, six weeks away from the trade deadline, Beatty, Mauricio broke out this weekend in a big way. Alvarez, Acuna, Vientos, and that'll be interesting when he gets back. There might be a little bit of a log jam now. There's such a key to this team, lengthening the lineup, providing important depth, potentially making this deadline coming up. I'm not saying the Mets won't be active, but I don't know if they're going to be as active as people think. And I think a lot of the answers are here in front of us. They just have to develop and be given the chance. And I know even Carlos Mendoza, particularly with Acuna, talked about the duality of development versus team need versus when does he go down to AAA? Even Alvarez, that conversation's come up. Would it behoove him to have some time because he seems a little confused at AAA? These kids, it's almost like they're learning on the job, but they're playing such an important part to what this team is trying to do this year.
Yeah, they are. And the young guys have a lot to do with the success. And Beatty had a hot stretch in May, and then he was slumping coming into today, but he did homer today, of course. And you know, Alvarez had a good game, but he's struggled since coming back from injury. And yeah, if the Mets are gonna get to where they want to go, they're gonna need big performances from Jeff McNeil, who had a big day today in Colorado, and they're gonna need Brandon Nimmo to be hitting consistently and hitting homers and getting on base. And you know, they can't just be a top-heavy lineup. Now, when Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, and Pete Alonso go, the Mets lineup goes. But they can't just rely on being top heavy like the Yankees of last year. They need everybody to be clicking on all cylinders, and it does, you know, point to the guys like Beatty, Alvarez, Vientos, Nimmo, McNeil, and now Mauricio, who's up, who had a pretty good series in Colorado as well.
Yeah, I mean, hits the ball hard. I mean, he had a frustrating at bat on Friday with the bases loaded, but his power, and he got a couple of hits today. Is Mauricio the one out of all of them? I mean, I'll even throw Vientos in there, who we've seen who had success in the postseason. Is he the one that excites you the most? I mean, in a lot of ways, a year after Vientos unseated Beatty, we may see Mauricio unseat Vientos after we thought Beatty might unseat Vientos after being unseated by Vientos a year earlier. It's total competition. It's actually quite a good thing when you talk about developing and keeping everybody on their toes.
I think it is a good thing. The young guys pushing themselves, and Vientos and Beatty, we've seen it since spring training of them, you know, competing with each other, making each other better. And now Mauricio's added to the fold, and he probably is the most exciting of the three. He hits the ball the hardest. That's really what it comes down to. And you saw with this home run, he hit it 456 feet. You know, he had a couple hits afterwards. Like he definitely he kills the baseball. So that is what probably makes him the most exciting. And Vientos hits the ball pretty hard too, but Mauricio does some special can do some special things, and has that versatility as well. So yeah, I think that Mauricio probably has the high ceiling of the three.
And I know you've been watching baseball a long time. This weekend in Colorado, for a while there, the ball wasn't carrying. I was like, what are they doing with the humidor out there? I remember back in the day, I'm going to sound like an old fart here, in the 90s. Look, a 9-2 lead, not a safe lead. Now, there was no Bichette at the other side. There's no Larry Walker or Vinny Castillo. None of those guys are on the other side. But with that said, still impressive by Mauricio, and a much different environment there with Colorado, and not the ball doesn't fly like it used to do out there. Although today might be a little bit different during the day in a day game.
Yeah, today was definitely different with the day game. Yesterday, the ball started to fly a little bit more, but yeah, they were like dead, and the ball looked deadened on Friday, where nothing was seemed to be carrying, and it didn't look like the Coors Field old that we've been used to.
The starting pitching. Are we at a point where, and I know maybe it only be six inning starts. We know that that might be where they're at. Are we confident to say that this is sustainable? We've seen them pitch well against the Cubs, a couple of series against the Dodgers, including one on the road. Okay, maybe the humidor had something to do with it, but it wasn't. They didn't get smacked around here in Colorado. I know the Rockies are lousy, but they're still a professional baseball team at home in a hitter's environment. I know Yankee series didn't go well, the Subway series, but it, other than McGill, the starting pitching wasn't the issue. It was the bullpen that imploded there on Sunday night. This staff is continuously, every time you say, okay, let's see McGill in Colorado, let's see them in LA, even Blackburn coming off the injured list. And I know he was spotty today, but he was excellent against the Dodgers. And that's a gnarly top of the lineup. So we're not, I mean, these are the top offensive teams in the league. Arizona earlier in the season, another good offensive team. Are you ready to proclaim this staff, even though they didn't go out and get a big name? Is this staff for real? And they got a couple of guys coming that, in a lot of ways, you'd rather them not be coming and mess up the mojo that's going on in Montas and Manaea. It'll be very interesting. Situation they have coming very quickly.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see when Montas is back and Minaya, of course, and what they're going to do, with that conundrum. But yeah, I think that the rotation is sustainable. And you look at Kodai Senga, you look at David Peterson and what they've been able to do. And Peterson did it last year. Senga did it his rookie year 2 years ago. Like, these guys are talented, and if they stay healthy, they're going to pitch like aces. And what the thing that I would look at, and I'm sure you've thought of this as well, but Clay Holmes, is he going to be able to keep up this performance? He's already hit his career high in innings. I believe 73, around 73 and a third innings is his career high that he hit after the last start over the weekend. And yeah, I think that that's something to keep an eye on. But overall, as a staff, I think that it is sustainable what they've been able to do because of guys like Senga, because of Peterson. Griffin Canning has always had that potential there. He pitched for the Angels, who they're not known for being able to develop pitchers, and the Mets have been able to unlock his potential. So they got Manaea coming back, they got Montas coming back. I think it's like last year where everyone said the Mets didn't have a frontline starter and they didn't have enough starting pitching, and they went out and proved everyone wrong. And I think it's been the same, if not better, this year.
It's funny you bring up Holmes. He's been so good. I mean, early in spring training, they were making comparisons to Logan Webb, and you're like, nah. But in a lot of ways, the ground balls, the dominance, he goes into, and he even admitted yesterday, the last 30, 40 pitches or so, he was gassed in Colorado, but he got the big outs and he worked his way through it. In a lot of ways, he'd be perfect setting up DS. And he could even maybe now be stretched out enough where he could give you a couple innings, an old school reliever. But the He's just too good in the rotation. It is a good problem to have, but it'll be very interesting to see how it shakes out. I know their rehab starts. Montas hasn't looked good down in his rehab starts. Manaea just started. I know that you still have a couple of weeks before this is a thing, but somebody's going to go down. McGill might go down. A reliever might have to go down. They don't have a lot of options going on over there. This is a good problem to have, an interesting situation. And maybe they'll obviously do six starters. Someone's going to the bullpen. And someone in the bullpen might play a key role in providing some innings so that with them needing 6 to 9 outs a night, providing a situation where they're not overworking Garrett and Brazenbaum and Stanek and to a lesser degree, Diaz.
Yeah, and they've already moved Blackburn to the bullpen, and we saw how that played out in today's game. He was able to come in relief of McGill and get the 4-inning save, for the Mets, the first time they've done that since 2008. And yeah, I think that they're whoever that they move to the bullpen when they do get fully healthy. And but at the same time, you can't count on that because you can never have too much starting pitching for a
I
reason.
know.
And, you don't know if they're going to be able to stay healthy as a staff the rest of the way. And a guy could go down, and then they only have five starters, or they do have six starters. If they lose a guy, but yeah, the rich would get richer if they were able to fully stay healthy and then move one of the guys to the bullpen when Melantos and Minaya do come back. And it would probably be McGill, because McGill's been the worst of the five, and he's been solid, but not as strong as he was to start the season in March and April. And he probably would be better suited as a long reliever, even though he's said time and again that he's a starter. He doesn't want to pitch in the bullpen, but at the same time, he's probably the one who's could go in the bullpen and make an impact. And he hasn't pitched as well as the other guys, the Holmeses, the Sangas, the Petersons, the Griffin Cannings. Like he hasn't performed as well as well as the other four have, and that's just the bottom line.
Yeah, that, and again, like you said, an interesting problem to have. Francisco Lindor, look, on Friday night, that was a game prime for what I call a stub your toe loss. Like, something that frustrating loss might have gone, would have been the most frustrating loss of the year. It could have changed the whole weekend. Here he is. Again, not Willis Reed here coming out before game seven, but gets a big hit, even stealing bases this weekend, showing no ill effects from the pinky toe being broken. I'm looking at numbers before we got on the air today. I mean, he's up there with the Miguel Tejadas and the Cal Ripken Juniors, and I know he's passed even Jeter on some offensive category lists. Now, I'm not trying to lionize him here, but he's starting to get into some serious territory. He's about as comfortable as we've seen an athlete in this town, and I know that the whole captain thing might be overrated, and I'm not one to make a big deal about it. But wouldn't it be cool at some point, and you have David Wright's retirement ceremony coming up, maybe some kind of passing of the baton. I don't know if that, and I read that on X, a fan had brought that up, and I wonder, is it time to make it official, even though we know this is the guy that is kind of that glue. He's kind of like the Brunson of the Mets, if you want to call him that. And I don't think I'm speaking, lionizing here. I really believe that, especially because when Soto wasn't hitting and it was just him and Pete Alonso, I mean, he was the guy coming up big, game-winning home runs, Energizer Bunny leading off with a home run. He's the guy right now, and I don't think you could ask for much more out of a centerpiece of your team. He's everything that you paid for, and I was skeptical back in 2021 when they traded for him, signed him to a long-term deal.
Yeah, he's certainly lived up to the deal so far. He's become a superstar, immortal in Mets history, and he's earned the captain title. He's just the way he leads. You see him talking to all the players, talking to the young players on the field. There was a shot of him having a conversation with Mauricio when they went onto the field together. I believe it was either I think it was last night or Friday night. And he's like having another coach, and he's having another coach in the dugout. And he's like he is the Brunson of the Mets, like you said. Lindor, it's not if, it's when he gets named Mets captain, because he has certainly earned that title. And he shows it day in and day out with the way that he leads, and just the type of teammate that he is. And he's grown into that. He wasn't necessarily like that when he got here with the Mets. And I've spoken to people who have said the same thing and echoed the same sentiment, that he's really grown into the leadership role, and has become a better teammate, and made an effort to become a great teammate. And we've really seen it fully on display, really, for the last 2 years or so.
Yeah, and I think for me, earlier in the year when he made those errors in, or that error in Minnesota, and he basically said, "Hey, I got to be better." You usually think of leaders of these intense guys. Keith Hernandez comes to mind. Pete Rose, how Derek Jeter was here for 15 years, this very intense, monotone leader. But Lindor's a different combination. He has a right amount of sunshine and smile. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a player. And again, I've been as critical of Lindor as the next person, but the fans haven't sung Mike Piazza's walk-up song. They didn't sing "Home Sweet Home" from Motley Crue back in the '90s, or David Wright, or anything like that. And I think there's a certain amount of seriousness, fun, and leadership. It's a rare combination, and let's hope it continues. And the guy ultimately does everything you want out of a leader. He plays every day. He holds himself accountable. And you can't ask for much more than that. And to me, that's the personification of what the Mets maybe have been missing here for quite some time, at least since David Wright became compromised and couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, he really has been the de facto leader of the bunch, and they really, like you said, they haven't had that since David Wright went down with his spinal stenosis and had to end his career. So yeah, I mean, I think that with Lindor, they'll probably wind up doing it maybe next offseason. That's my prediction, is that they didn't want to do it this year in the same offseason where they signed Juan Soto. That was the talk of the winter. The talk around the team, but this is Lindor's team, and again, he's earned the title of captain, and it's not if, it's when.
Pete Alonso, I know in a league that has Shohei Ohtani, it's hard to win an MVP, and we have a long way to go. We're not even halfway through. But wow, this is as locked in as I've seen him. and he's a better hitter than he was his rookie year. He's about as locked in power-wise as he was his rookie year, and he's driving in runs like he did a couple of years ago during their 100-win season under Buck. But I don't know if this the 300 batting average is sustainable. But this is a totally different version of Pete Alonso. I kept saying, is he going to morph into maybe like more of a Paul Goldschmidt or a Paul Konerko or like a Richie Sexton? He was leaning more towards Richie Sexton a year ago. And now, I mean, is it fair to say, I mean, this keeps up. I mean, you have to at least think there's some MVP votes for him in his, in the future, even in a league that has Ohtani.
Yeah, Alonso's played like an MVP this year. He looks like a man on a mission ever since the saga of the offseason and his free agency saga concluded. And he came back to the Mets, which he never wanted to leave in the first place, but there was a lot of drama tied to that, of course, as everyone knows. He looks like a guy who's destined to opt out of his deal after this year. But I don't see how the Mets, more so than ever before, I don't see how the Mets could let him go. And you mentioned the 300 batting average. Yeah, that's not sustainable. But if he hits 280, 285 this year, I mean, that's a great year. That's the best. That's a career year for him in the batting average department. And Pete Alonso was accountable in spring training. He said the last 2 years were not his best. And I think more so he looks like a more sophisticated hitter this year. And he looks more so like the version of the 2022 Pete Alonso, as you mentioned, under Buck, that year where he was an RBI machine. And that's what he's been so far this year. I think 16 RBIs, 17 RBIs in June so far.
Yeah, 61 on the year on pace, probably for 150 ribeyes here. And you got to say, maybe Soto's made him a better hitter. I know he's hitting behind Soto. I know Soto's had his ups and downs. You're starting to see the on-base offensive machine that you know he could be. But you have to think that Soto, being in front of him just by the mere presence of the walks, let's put it that way, has helped him a little bit. Because he hasn't had the kind of protection all year, really all year. You'll be wondering if the guys behind him don't get going, whether it be Vientos or Mauricio or, you know, McNeil has stepped up recently. Will they start walking him? But when you have Soto on, or maybe you have a couple runners on, you have no choice. It's either you start pitching to Soto, which everybody knows that's inevitably going to go bad if you make that a habit, or you take your chances with Alonso. It makes sense to take chances with Alonso. But look, it's not Soto Judge from a year ago, but it ain't chopped liver either. Especially with Soto starting to hit the ball a little bit and coming to his own.
Yeah, 2-3 hit games this weekend in Colorado. And it's like pick your poison right now between Soto and Alonso and Lindor at the top of the lineup. And, I actually like with what they're doing with having Nimmo bat in the two hole. Nimmo's really come around since they moved him up in the order. But Alonso, Alonso is playing like an MVP candidate. And he's someone who, once the guys get going behind him, it's like he's only going to be, even better than what we've seen so far. So, like you said, he's very much focused this year. He's an emotional guy. He plays with his heart on his sleeve. This was always going to be a career year for Alonso. And then the Mets are going to have to make a decision. Do they want to keep him, in Queens for the remainder of his career? And I think that answer is going to be yes. And now he surpassed David Wright today for second most home runs in Mets history. And he's only 9 away from surpassing Darryl Strawberry. So, I think that Alonso's going to wind up, when all is said and done, he's going to be a Met for life. And he's going to have a major, major MVP type year for them this year once the season's concluded.
When I was thinking a little bit about Wright, not only because I was thinking about this whole captain thing with Lindor, but I was thinking of Wright and Reyes and Beltran and the opportunity lost that group had, all the stuff that happened off the field, and essentially a roster that, at that point, it was a different front office. They didn't have the resources or the mindset like this front office is. But Soto, Lindor, and Alonso are kind of like that second chance. I know it's not one-to-one, but Lindor is everything you would have thought at some point Reyes would morph into. And obviously Pete is that homegrown, version of maybe Wright. And Beltran and Soto, there's tons of similarities. But I don't know about you, but I was thinking a little bit about, that group. And I know that'll come up more as the summer comes on because with Wright's number retirement. And, a little bit of maybe this is a chance to redeem a group that I think has been maligned and looked at negatively when in reality, and everybody who was around knew 06 was a really fun summer that, just turned bad in October. So it was just, I don't know if you thought about it, but as I see Soto, and some of the things gone on, it reminds me of those whatever they would call the Los Mets, the Omaha Mets, whatever you wanted to call them.
I've seen some tweets talking about comparing Wright and Reyes to Alonso and Lindor. And I think Alonso and Lindor are better than that tandem, with just with the numbers that they've put up. I mean, I think at least at the end of their Mets careers, they should, overall have better numbers than that tandem did together. And Reyes, of course, had a couple great years, and then injuries started to hurt him, and then he left after winning. Of course, he won the batting title in his last year,
Right.
but then he left for the
Right.
Marlins. Lindor has, he's runner up for MVP last year. He's going to be in the MVP conversation this year again. I think he's going to most likely have a better year than he did last year. And Alonso's putting together a great year, and he also hit 53 home runs his rookie year. So he's had some monster years. They both had some monster years, and they have Soto, who essentially is like the Beltran of that group. So yeah, I think that there's definitely worth some comparison there, and I think that the present day might be better than the 06 and that team, the core. They were calling it their own version of the core four back then.
Yep.
When they had Delgado as well, I think that these guys might be more talented and probably will end up with better numbers than the former group did.
Yep. And as we wrap up here, a couple quick things before I let you go. The bridge to Diaz. I mean, Garrett and Brazenbaum have had good years, but there is some red lights there with usage. There's some red lights against left-handed batters. Garrett struggles with his command against lefties, walks a few too many. Brazenbaum is prone to the long ball. Stanek makes me nervous. A lot of times I feel like, and this is not a knock, because I think Garrett, I had him as one of the breakout bullpen candidates. I think they're more sixth and seventh inning relievers. The Mets really could use a second closer. I know that that's what Minter was. And I think the losses they had this road trip, the two to the Dodgers, and some they've had over the last month that have been rough with the bullpen. You think about Minter. Is that, and I don't know if this guy's available, and it might cost you, depending on where you go. Is that arm available? Is that second closer? Is there somebody out there? Or do you think the Mets will continue to try to find value? I know they signed a couple of value arms, minor league deals. Will they just look at the, like you mentioned earlier, McGill out of the bullpen, Blackburn, is there, I know we talk about Holmes. I think that's crazy to talk about now with how good as a starter he's been, but if his innings become an issue, does he move into that kind of role? It is a lot of possibilities, but I mean, acquiring that second closer, or maybe the David Robertson that we thought they were, the tandem we thought they were going to have with Diaz a couple of years ago. That's the vision I guess I have. But what are your thoughts heading into the deadline? Is that something that is top of your shopping list? Are there other things that maybe you're looking for, assuming that the kids on the offensive side, and I think they will score enough runs, do what they're supposed to do?
I think bullpen is going to be where they're the most aggressive at the deadline. I think that they're going to be adding multiple arms in the bullpen like they did last year, but this time they're going to get a bigger impact arm. And if you're looking for a second closer, Kyle Finnegan's a name that comes to mind for me. I'm surprised he wasn't dealt last year, but he's a rental arm this year. And the Mets traded for Jesse Winker last year. They could circle back with their division rivals and trade for Kyle Finnegan next if they want that second closer. And I think that makes a lot of sense if they're going to be aggressive and add in the bullpen as opposed to in the starting rotation, given the plethora of starting arms that they currently have. And they do really miss Minter, so that is something that they need to target, left-handed or a righty who has good splits against lefties. And that second closer like Kyle Finnegan would fit that bill. So yeah, I think that's definitely should be one of their at the top of their wish list come the trade deadline.
So what do you got coming up at Sports Illustrated? I'm guessing, are you gonna have a happy Frank the Tank on his podcast? Is he gonna be okay? A couple of weeks ago, I was like, Frank, man, I had to say, you're driving me crazy. You can't be this. You can't freak out. I mean, between the Knicks stuff and the Mets, Frank, I hit my wall with Frank. I said, Frank, you're driving me crazy. I can't take it. But that's who he is. And I mean, even Frank is gonna complain about something this week in Colorado. But what do you got coming up over the next couple of weeks?
Well, yeah, and Frank's happy now that they swept and that they
Right.
made up for Friday's nail biter with
Yes.
some laughers today and yesterday in the next two games. But yeah, just overall coverage of the trade deadline. You can check out my work at si.com/MLB/Mets and on Twitter and Instagram at Ragazzo Report, RAGAZZO Report. Full coverage of Mets day-to-day news. and the season and the schedule as we progress, and the trade deadline, which is only 6 weeks away. So definitely check me out there.
Pat, you've been generous of your time. Thanks so much on this Sunday. Let's do it again, my friend.
Yeah, of course, Mike, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. That's Pat Ragazzo, Ragazzo Report on SI. Appreciate him joining us. Well, that's all I got for you guys. Hope you enjoyed this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Enjoy the day off. Mets have a little homestand coming up. Washington, Tampa, before they have an opportunity to really put the hammer down. They've got a number of meetings with the Braves, the Phillies. You want the Braves to win a couple of games before they go into that series because you never want to see a team, just like I didn't want to see the Rockies with the slump they're on, and they did win a couple of games in Miami. So an interesting rest of the month of June. The Mets have a chance to put themselves in a great position in the National League East and heading into July, heading into the All-Star break, heading into the trade deadline. And there are shades of 2022 with this, and I know that that brings up a lot of bad memories for some of you because of the fact that the Mets didn't win the division, but short of another 2001 Met Seattle 98 Yankees run by the Braves and the Phillies, if the Mets do what they have to do, they're in a really great spot. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I want to thank Pat Ragazzo of Sports Illustrated for joining us. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you get great premium content. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast at the end of the week. Till then, take care, everybody.